Welcome to the podcast of The Diane Rehm Show, smart conversation and civil dialogue from WAMU and NPR in Washington.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Verizon Wireless, working to constantly strengthen the connection quality and reliability of its network. Verizon Wireless, our people, our network.
For joining us, I'm Diane Rehm. To millions of Americans, Jim Dale is the voice of Harry Potter. He recorded all 7 books in the series, received a Grammy and a place in the Guinness Book of World Records for his work. Jim Dale joins me in the studio to talk about how he found, created, and kept track of over 200 voices for the audiobooks. We'll also talk about his life pre-Harry Potter as a stand-up comedian, a pop singer, and a lead man in films on stages in London and on Broadway. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. And I can promise you that even though Jim Dale is here in the studio, has read the entire series, has read the last book, we will not be giving away the ending. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Diane. Nice to be with you.
I'm sure there were just people hounding you during that last week before the book came out, wanting to know what that ending was.
Have you ever had a grandchild give you the Chinese wrist torture?
No.
No. Well, I had it, and it's terrifying. trying to get the answer.
I remember that Chinese wrist, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, the children still remember that. But I had that from the grandchildren when they were visiting from London. But the best thing to do when you've got a lovely secret like that is to let the child unwrap it himself.
Is it a relief now to be able to talk about the book?
In a way, yes, because I suppose after you've been involved in anything for 8 years, as I have, doing the Harry Potter audiobooks, then you know there's inevitably an ending to it. Something has to end eventually. And book 7, I was almost reluctant to record it at the speed I did. I wanted to slow it down the same way that when you read a book, you get to the last 5 pages and you think, I want this to spread out for the next 3 or 4 days. So, yes, I was very, very sad to record the last book. But at the same time, very eager to see where J.K. Rowling's fantastic mind had taken Harry and his friends for this very, very last installment of this wonderful creation of a magical world that she's come up with.
How did she choose you to record these?
Well, I think
books.
She left the choosing of the narrator to the American publishers, and one of them saw me in a play off Broadway called Travels with My Aunt. It was a very famous film with Maggie Smith, and they said, well, Jim Dale is in this play. There are 3 of them, and they do 33 characters between them. They said, wow, wonderful, let's get Jim Dale. So they signed me up, and then they said to me one day, how many characters did you do in all? I said, just the 2, the aunt and the nephew. And they said, what about the other 2 guys? I said, well, they did 31 characters between them. So I got the job under false pretenses.
Oh, how marvelous.
But that's the story of
But having... had you met J.K. Rowling before you actually got the job?
No. I think 3 books were already out and on the market and already sold. So I hadn't met J.K. until about the 4th book.
I see.
And then we met 2 or 3 times after that. She actually stood at my shoulder as I did a reading on television, which is quite daunting when you think think of it, to have the author looking over your shoulder while you interpret her characters with voices.
Talk a little about how you approached the task of creating voices for so many characters.
Well, first and foremost, you have to go along with what the author herself describes the character to be in the book. From the description of the character, you can sometimes get a very good idea of what sort of voice. Perhaps not necessarily what sort of accent, but that's up to the narrator to decide which accent. So I read the words that she gives this character to say, as well as the description. A wheezy little man came hobbling into the room and in a high-pitched voice said... Well, there's a very good idea of what the voice should sound like. And then when I had those first early books, I used to take a lot of time deciding which voices to use in my home, working out. I'd perhaps give each character three voices, and then over the period of the next two or three days, listen to myself and say, no, I prefer that voice. Huh. And so I'd settle for that. Later on, after the fourth book, we realized that we had to now record our audio book because the latest book would be on the shelves in maybe 6 weeks, and our audio book had to be there, or the children wouldn't be able to wait for the audio book. They would buy the ordinary book, and then the parents would say, well, we're not paying money to buy the audio book as well. So we had to really do a quick job. So I would get the book on a Saturday, and I would be in the studio on Monday morning recording it. Now, I can't read 700 pages over the weekend, so I would record, I would read 100 pages and invent the voices and put them on a little tape recorder. And then I would go into the studio on Monday and read as many pages as I could of that 100. And then that evening go back to my apartment and read another 100 pages and invent those voices and proceed to record those the following day. So on until the end of the book. So I never really knew what was going to happen in the story. I hadn't read the book until I actually sat down at the microphone on that first day of recording and started to seriously read the words. Up until then, I'd only glanced through it to get to the voices, which to me were very important to get the correct accents.
Jim Dale, he is the voice of all the characters in the Harry Potter audiobook series as a narrator. He's won a Grammy Award, 5 Grammy nominations, and 7 Audie Awards. He's a member of the Order of the British Empire. He's also won a Tony Award in 1980 for his performance in Barnum and a Drama Desk Award for his 1995 off-Broadway performance in Travels with My Aunt, which is how he got the Harry Potter job. Do join us, 800-433. Well, you know, before I've even asked, the lines are filled. Can you be surprised at that? Jim Dale, how did this ability to create voices, how did you begin to realize you had that ability?
Not until I was very old, not until I was asked to do the Harry Potter books, did I even consider I had a voice for mimicry. I was never a very good impressionist. In fact, my first job on the stage, I was an impressionist, and I walked out and I did my impressions to get a job in this touring production, and they said, your impressions were terrible. And I remember saying, no, I think they were very good. And he said, no, they were terrible. We don't know who your mother's butcher is. We don't know who the local vicar is. And I said, well, they do in Rothwell, where I come from. I said, no, we'll be touring England. Nobody knows who the vicar is. I said, well, I think it's rather funny, an impressionist doing impressions of people you've never heard of. He said, no, no, no. But you tripped on the curtain when you came on accidentally. I said, yes. He said, well, that was funny. Go home, get an act where you fall over, come back tonight. And that's due to those bad impressions. That's how I got into show business. So I don't know. Perhaps when I joined show business, I was lucky enough to be part of the music hall tradition of England. We had the repertory theatre, which gave legitimate plays. We had the vaudeville type of theatres, and mine was the music hall. And I toured England for every week for the next 2.5 years, playing at a different theatre and staying in that particular town, city, or village. So I think over the those 2.5 years, I got to know many, many different accents from not only England, but Scotland, Wales, Ireland, and all these stay in your memory.
How do you think that recording the Harry Potter series has affected your daily life?
Not in a great deal, because once I've finished recording it and promoting it, then it's been another year and a half before the next book comes out. So in that year and a half, I go back to my job, which is that of an actor. And I've been just come a few months ago, I was on Broadway in the Threepenny Opera by Bertolt Brecht, and I had a wonderful time doing that. There's a Broadway musical next spring, hopefully with Glenn Close. It's called Busker Alley. And we did it a few months ago. There is theatrical work in between times, so it's only when they phone me up and say there's another Harry Potter book that I suddenly realize, yes, I'm part of all this.
And do people know what you look like? Do people stop you in the street?
Wow. In England, go back all those years, I used to be a pop singer. And when you're a pop singer and on television a lot and have your own television show, you're bound to be recognized. And I was recognized at a very early age, and I really didn't like it. I would have people grab me by the shoulder in the street and say, hey, it's that silly devil from the Carry On films or from da-da-da, and I hated it. Coming to America as a theater actor, I had none of that problem, and it was wonderful to leave New York City and go anywhere I like and nobody recognizes me, which I thought was wonderful. And it's even better now because being a narrator and known throughout the country for your voice, I can also go anywhere I like. And until I open my mouth.
Exactly.
Well, you know, lots of things can happen as they have done.
Before we take a short break, let us hear the voice of Harry Potter.
Well, you've been listening to it all this time, because when I first started recording, I thought, if I give Harry Potter a different accent, then I'm going to be switching into that accent for the next 7 books. Why not make him a young Jim Dale with Jim Dale's accent like this? It's a nondescript accent. I used to have a very broad one from the Midlands. My voice has changed over the years, and the accent that I have now is from nowhere, really. It's just an English accent. So I thought, let's give Harry that. And so gradually over the years, my voice has just got a little deeper when it gets to Harry, so that in this last book, I realized that he's got the same voice that I have.
Jim Dale. He is the voice of all the characters in the Harry Potter audiobook series. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll have your calls, his voice, your email. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm sure many of you remember when J.K. Rowling herself was on this program after the Harry Potter series had begun. She talked about the manner in which she had brought this series to life there as she sat in her kitchen scribbling on pieces of paper. And now we have Jim Dale, who has brought J.K. Rowling's words to recording. And he is the voice of all the characters in the Harry Potter series. For those of you who are interested, you might check Tuesday, July 17, art section in the New York Times. There is a front page story on Jim Dale, who obviously, before all the rest of the world knew, he knew exactly what happened at the end of the book, but we are not going to say a word about it. What kind of inspiration did you use for Hermione's voice?
Well, Hermione, I had to think back to probably the first girlfriend I ever had, and she had a voice very much like Hermione. She spoke very, very quickly, as if she was trying to get all the words out before she finished the sentence. So it was that breathless voice, and I thought, let's try that for Hermione. And that was the voice that made the producer laugh when I first did it. And I thought, somebody my age doing a nine-year-old girl called Hermione, this is off the wall. But a lot of the voices have made me laugh, Hermione especially. But there, as you say, there were so many voices that...
But then you had to switch when you had conversations going on.
Yes.
Among principals. Yeah. Did you have to stop the tape and rethink, or did you, in your mind, switch off?
Many times I would have read it quickly before. Say we had to stop for some reason, I would quickly read the next page, and then I'd be able to jump from one character to another. But it is quite difficult when you've forgotten what the voice is, when you get to that voice on the page and you've forgotten what it is. Because you only invented it the night before, and it was one of 50 voices you had to invent. So I made a record. I make records on a little tape recorder. So that would probably be voice 33 in the script. And I would switch to voice 33 on the tape, and that would remind me what the voice was that I invented. And I would...
How much of the book did you memorize as you went along?
As I said, I got the book on Saturday. I'm in the studio on Monday. I can't even read the book. I can't really focus on the words. I'm looking for the characters. Unless I go into the studio with all the character voices for that day, we can't record. But I would sit down at the microphone and start reading, and this would be literally the first time I've read the book. And as you know, you don't, in recording, have take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You just keep recording until somebody stops you because you've done something wrong, or your stomach rumbles because you didn't have enough breakfast, or did you hear that?
Yeah, of
course. The microphone picks up every sound in the studio. But the joy about it is, even though we stop start hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, you stop for a tea break, you know, you stop, and then you know after a tea break you stop for a pee break. I mean, there's so many breaks that you keep having, even to actually turn the script page over.
Of course.
You have to break. You
of
have
course.
To break to change the tapes.
Huh.
So with all those breaks, and then suddenly from another producer comes in with yesterday's recording, saying, we've just detected two mistakes you made. Can you drop back into that mood you were in to record Hagrid?
Let us hear Hagrid.
Well, Hagrid was talking like this because Hagrid was the sort of man that my uncle was. I had an uncle down in Cornwall, and he used to pick me up in his arms and throw me up in the air like that, and I'd land down, and I was only 36 years old at the time, so he was quite a big fella.
Oh, he's wonderful. He's wonderful. And Dobby.
Dobby, sir. Dobby's my favourite, sir, because he came into my life, sir, when Jim got into an elevator, sir. And Jim was in this elevator, and it was very, very crowded.
Actually, it was. It was crowded. I was packed into this elevator, and I was pushing my way back, and the doors closed, and the elevator started to go up, and this little voice behind me said, little voice,
"Excuse me, mate, can you take your bum out of my face?"
And I turned around, and there's this little midget. And I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I really do apologise."
He says, "It's all right, sir. They all do it. They all do it."
Bless his heart. And that was 30 years ago, and I've never forgotten that little voice.
Now, there is, of course, Professor Dumbledore.
Professor Dumbledore was the voice of John Houseman, and John was a dear friend of mine. And when John spoke, he emphasized the important words in those sentences. So with that, I just used John's voice as a springboard
to the voice of Professor Dumbledore, because John Houseman did a wonderful series called Paper Chase, where he played the headmaster, and I remembered that. And so it's just a little bit of a tribute to John.
Jim Dale, you just cleared your throat very, very briefly, and I'm just wondering whether through all this recording your throat ever got sore or weary or strained, mm-hmm. or and how you dealt with that.
Well, I just cleared my throat because I did Hagrid. And of course, Hagrid is the most terrifying voice to do, because if you're not careful within 10 minutes of recording somebody like Hagrid, you're going to lose the ability to talk, because it makes your vocal cords seize up, they get raw. And I did it once in the studio, and I had to give up recording the book for the rest of the day because I'd used too much voice. And so that's it, just clearing your throat now and then. But there are tricks of getting over all of this. Sometimes your mouth is full of saliva, and it can be heard and picked up on the microphone. The secret of that is a green apple. You take one bite of a green apple, chew it, spit it out, and it clears up all the saliva in your mouth. Nice dry mouth again. Little tricks of the trade that were... I didn't invent them. I was taught this because I had no idea how to record an audiobook. Nobody told me. I just thought, better do something.
And so what happens with the opposite if you had a dry throat, dry mouth?
A dry mouth. Well, that way you've got lozenges, you've got so many things. You mustn't take too many drinks, you know. Water does dry up your throat as well as, you know, so nice little thing to have a lozenge under your tongue.
So that's what you use.
Sometimes, yes. But even with a little lozenge under your tongue, it changes your voice.
No question.
Slightly. You understand?
All right. How about moaning Myrtle?
Moaning Myrtle. Oh, she's a lovely one.
Yes, she was the one who talked like this. She says, I know what you call me. You call me Moaning Myrtle, Miserable Myrtle, Moody Myrtle.
And Peeves says,
you forgot to say pimply. Yeah.
So Peeves is a gorgeous cat.
Peeves talking like this. Gawfaw. And that voice came from a comedian in England called Terry Scott. Now, Terry Scott used to dress up like a little boy, even though it was on radio, and he used to talk like this.
And I heard Terry talking on the radio. This is what he said.
My tortoise died, and I was so upset, I was crying. And my daddy said, why are you crying? I said, my tortoise is dead. My daddy said, well, don't cry, and I'll take you to see the film Superman. And I said, ooh, the Superman, what, cool, four. So we are walking down the garden path to go to see the film Superman, and my tortoise came out of the bushes. And my daddy said, there's your tortoise. Your tortoise is not dead. So we don't have to go and see Superman now, do we? And I said, let's kill it.
So, you know, when you hear a story like that, and a voice like that, and he was a dear friend of mine. We made a film together once. So that's a little tribute to Terry.
Your tongue moves in different ways. Your mouth is shaped in different ways, mm-hmm. as you are speaking. Even your whole facial structure changes.
What you have to do as a narrator, if you do the voices, you really have to put yourself into that body of that character and tell the story through their eyes and speak the words through their mouth that will project the story along. So you have to become that character. Mm. So with that little boy, I feel I'm playing it as a little boy. I have to, because that's the sincerity that comes into it. Somebody once said, you know, as soon as you can fake sincerity, you got it made.
Professor Snape.
Well, Professor Snape, yes. Alan Rickford is the most wonderful actor that I think I've known who can depict these sort of characters. And over those last few films, Alan has been absolutely wonderful.
Do you know he played in the most marvelous film about death and dying.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a totally beautiful, sympathetic character in that movie. So to see him as Professor Snape, his acting range is gorgeous.
Absolutely. Wonderful. He's one of my favorite actors. And that's one of my favorite characters.
All right. We have many, many callers. We're going to open the phones now. 800-433-8850. First to Pocatello, Idaho. Good morning, Susan. You're on the air.
Good morning. I am thrilled to be able to talk to you. When I heard that you were going to be on the phone, on the show, I just thought about this all night. What would I say to you if I ever had the chance? You're such a part of our family. We have all of the audio tapes with the exception of seven, but we want to all finish the book first. And you have been a part of many long drives with our family and dinner conversations. Before we heard book five, we did a lot of talking about what's Umbridge going to sound like, and you did her marvelously. And I just want to say that your work matters. Your art matters. It has made a tremendous impact on my family, on me personally, and on the children that I interact with on a daily basis as an educator. And I just want to thank you so much for bringing the world alive of Harry Potter for everybody.
Well, thank you so very, very much. And, you know, one great advantage about the audio book is that a young child who is unable to read can listen to an audio book and appreciate the literature and the writing for at least a year before they can read. And so that's giving them a great advantage in their education.
At 27 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And now to Traverse City, Michigan. Good morning, Kelly.
Hi. Thank you for having me on your show. I sort of want to echo the sentiments made by the previous caller. I read the first Harry Potter book to my son when he was six, and he was not capable of reading the book at that time.
Ah, yes.
And he subsequently has read all of them and has very much enjoyed the audiobooks, and I just wanted to share a memory that one of my fondest memories of his childhood, he's now 11, is tucking him in at night and listening to your voice on the audio tapes in his darkened room, and it's something that I will take with me for the rest of my life.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you.
Thank you. By the way, to follow that, I had a young lady say to me, I nearly gave my grandmother a heart attack by telling her that I go to bed with Jim Dale and I have been doing it for the last 6 years.
Thanks for calling, Kelly. And now to Jacksonville, Florida. Good morning, Casey.
Good morning, Diane.
Morning, Casey.
Morning, Jim. I should say Sir Jim.
No.
If you haven't been knighted yet, you should.
Oh, thank you so much.
Diane, just as a quick side, I had the unequal pleasure of meeting you when you came to Jacksonville.
Aha.
For the...
I remember that voice.
And it was so funny because I'm usually very... shy and reserved, and we got, I'm totally visually impaired, Jim, so we got to the, in line, and I heard her live up in front of me, and I went, there she is! and everybody, of course, made room, and I got up, and Diane wrote a very nice, message, she and John, her husband, both, but getting to the subject, this is very appropriate because I had heard about Harry Potter, but I never, because fantasy was never my thing, never. Tolkien didn't do a thing for me.
Sure.
I heard J.K. Rowling interviewed on your show, and she read the passage in Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone where he was, they were selecting his wand, and I was caught. I mean, I was hooked. So as soon as they became available, I bought the first three books, and I have all six of them. I have to say, the one I had the most fun with was Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Great fun.
That's great. Casey, I'm so glad that though you, as you say, are visually impaired, you've had an opportunity to enjoy these books as well. That must please you greatly.
Absolutely. Jim. Absolutely. You're bringing something to a book that is another dimension. You're bringing the character to life, and that's really what it's about. Unlike the film, you see, the film of Harry Potter is they've taken a 27-hour book, and they've condensed it to 2 hours. Now, with special effects. So it's inevitable so many characters are going to disappear from that film, and so many storylines and so much wonderful dialogue is going to disappear. So because the films, the books were not meant to be filmed. They were meant to be read or listened to. And I'm thrilled to bits that you can go back to the book, you can go back to the audio book and listen and hear each and every character's words the way that J.K. Rowling wanted you to hear them.
And you can also imagine for yourself the sense of wonder that these games and this flight, this magic that takes place in the book can take place in your mind.
That's
rather
right.
than in front of you on this huge screen. Jim Daly is with me, and when we come back, you'll hear more of the voice of Harry Potter. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University. Additional support for NPR comes from this and other NPR stations, and from the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting efforts to find and fight the causes of homelessness, on the web at melvilletrust.org. And from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting health insurance coverage for all America's children, on the web at covertheuninsured.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, director Werner Herzog tells us about making his new film Rescue Dawn, about an American pilot shot down over Laos during the Vietnam War and tortured in a prisoner of war camp in the jungle. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And welcome back. Jim Dale, who, of course, is not only the voice of all the characters in the Harry Potter audiobook, he is also a two-time Guinness World Record holder, once for having created a total of 134 different character voices for one audiobook, and that was Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, and the second time for occupying the first six places in the top 10 audiobooks of America in 2005. Now, here's an email from Karen who says, why is there a U.S. version as well as a U.K. version?
This I don't know. I think it's because certain words, for instance, sneakers, the word sneakers over here implies footwear that we all know about. If the word was trainers, then you wouldn't know what that meant.
Oh,
and that's
I see.
The word in England. Sneakers in England are called trainers. Every child knows
and
that.
And you did not record the UK version.
That's right. I just had the manuscript given about a foot deep it was put in front of me. And that's what I have to read, every word of that. And if she had changed certain words, that was her prerogative. And she thought it might make it easier for the children to understand what she was implying.
Karen goes on to say, we have listened to Stephen Fry read all the books. Have you heard the Fry version? If so, can you comment on the differences? Now, you've just mentioned a word, but mm-hmm. is there a difference in the kinds of inflections? I would think so.
I've never heard my own version. I've never listened to me narrating Harry Potter, let alone Stephen Fry. No, I don't know Stephen's work involving the Harry Potter books. I don't know whether he does all the voices. No, I just know what I do over
here. All right, and here's one from Barry in Indianapolis, who says, first, I'd like to say to you, Mr. Dale, I was floored by your stunning performance over the years listening to the Harry Potter audiobooks. I would like to know why you changed your pronunciation of the Voldemort character from the canonical, so says J.K. Rowling in 1999, Voldemort, to the film's Voldemort.
Do you know, I never really knew what the word minutia meant until I started recording Harry Potter books. You would not believe how many times I've been picked up for tiny little things that I thought were not even mistakes, but they turn out to be. There's always people there probing with a little pin to see. And Voldemort, yeah, that was my upbringing. I was, in England, that would be the way you pronounce it, Voldemort, for the French version of it. However, after about three or four books, someone in the production side said, I think you ought to put a T on the end. I said, that will confuse a lot of people. They said, no, nobody will notice. Oh, well, they did. Thousands and thousands of children have noticed, and I knew they would. But I was asked to do it. It wasn't my opinion, my decision. So I was asked to put a T on the end to call it Voldemort, which, of course, made sense if everybody in the film was doing it. It would seem silly for another narrator not to pronounce the word correctly.
So you yielded.
I yielded.
And
yes.
Here's an email from Brenda who says, did you go to Kettering Grammar?
Absolutely.
Oh,
somebody knows
terrific.
Kettering. Do you know Kettering Grammar? It might be a small school. It was the only school I went to when I was a young man. But
where is it?
It's in Northamptonshire,
okay.
72 miles north of London, 72 miles to the sea on one side, 72 miles to the sea on the other. The dead
Perfect.
Center.
Perfect.
In every way, the dead center of England. And I went to that school, and that was the first school that discovered the Russian Sputnik through their telescope. The British government, the American government, had no idea that Russia had sent up a Sputnik until Kettering Grammar School, little telescope, spotted it and phoned through to the government to say, we've seen something moving up there that isn't an asteroid or a meteor.
What
meteorite.
A story.
How about it? Isn't that wonderful?
And finally, from John, what do you think that voicing the Harry Potter books adds to their meaning or the experience of them? Do you think it's importantly different from reading them silently to oneself?
Absolutely, because what you will do when you read it silently to yourself, especially if you're an American child reading an English book, you will perhaps put a voice for those characters in your own mind. You'll put a probably an American accent to them, or what you think is an English accent to them. But when you have a narrator who can perhaps give you different variations of character voices from various areas of England, Scotland, Wales and Ireland, suddenly you're bringing that different dimension. You're now hearing the way J.K. Rowling wants you to hear those characters speak, and that can only add colour.
Let's go now to Raleigh, North Carolina. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Diane. It's an incredible pleasure to speak with both of you.
Thank
Hi, Chris.
You.
Good morning.
I discovered you for the very first time when I was doing a three-hour commute to Greenville, North Carolina, from Raleigh. And on the suggestion of my wife that I get an audio book, I quite think she was tired of hearing me complain about the trip. But inevitably, I was 10 or 15 minutes late wherever I got, because I had to stay in the car and listen to the last bit of it. But it's you've become really part of the sort of a part of our family. We my daughters and my son have been reading the books prior to me listening to the audio tape. I had not read the books. The only thing I did was I've seen the movies, and they now listen to the audio tape as they read the book. So I read along with the audio tape. And
that's wonderful, Chris, because that's also what a young child can do who can't really read very well. If they have the book in front of them and follow the story by listening to it at the same time, it can only give them wonderful knowledge of construction of sentences, construction of the language.
Good point.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
and that's exactly what we're doing with my now six-year-old.
Well, Chris, listen, I'm going to, in next week, I'll be in Charlotte, North Carolina, so maybe I'll see you.
Oh. Awesome. Yeah, that's great.
Excellent. Thanks for calling, Chris.
Thank you.
To Wheeling, West Virginia. Good morning, Lance.
Good morning, Diane. I have to say that I love the show.
Thank you.
Mr. Davey, I really love the books. I've been completely hooked on them, and I have to admit I've never read any of the books. I've only listened to them on my various commutes. And I have to share something. I'm listening to Book 7 right now as I'm driving to Cleveland, and I was switching CDs out, and I checked the CD, and your voice didn't stop. It was quite confusing at first. I'm like, wait a minute, that's him, but he's not reading the story. I realized you were on the show. A lot of my questions have been answered already, but I had one more minutiae question. Did you change the way you pronounce Hermione's name from the first book on? Didn't you pronounce it a different way?
You see what I mean?
Yes,
minutia,
I do.
They
exactly.
Did it. Again, yes, it was slightly changed. I was asked to change it. Goodness knows why, but Hermione. In England, we have, I've always pronounced it Hermione. Other people in England pronounce it Hermione. And it's so minuscule that changes, but so many people notice it. But yes, you're absolutely right. I did change it, but only by people saying you should do it.
Thanks for calling. The notion of Harry growing older,
mm-hmm.
How has that affected your reading of Harry and his voice?
I let that happen through the writing. I let J.K. Rowling describe it. She describes Harry's moods are a little darker now. His moods of behavior are a little deeper, darker. And so this to me signals that the voice should not be as free and easy and as cheerful as it was before. The first books were very funny. The school song, you know, was a very funny song. They're singing about having bald heads and scabby knees, you know, but that was the first book. Now, of course, it's a little deeper, and as we go through the whole series, it gets deeper and deeper. So she dictates to me by her description of Harry, the scenes and Harry's attitudes as to what level of voice I should, not level, level sorry, what sort of voice I should use for Harry, a deeper one, a more somber one, a more serious tone.
You know, I think we should remind listeners that you've also recorded Around the World in 80 Days. You've recorded Peter Pan. You've recorded A Christmas Carol.
Mm-hmm.
Very different experience.
Absolutely. But the reason I did that was because so many children were saying, we've become great fans of yours. And I thought, well, you know, after the 7 Harry Potters, do I lose my fans? What happens? Can I not perhaps ask them to join me on a journey to other types of literature which can be called classic books. And these are the books that were written by other writers, perhaps long gone, but who were wonderful writers and could bring an original story to the pages of a book, and perhaps introduce them to Lewis Carroll, introduce them to all the classic writers. And so far I've recorded 3 classic books, and I'm very pleased to say they're selling very well. And we hope to do 1 a year, so that we can hopefully lead those children into books that they can perhaps explore now. They can, now they know that there are other writers like J.K. Rowling, perhaps even better, may I say. You know, they can do their own exploring and become very literate with the literature.
I'd like to hear the voice of Peter Pan.
Again, that was, it's a sort of, not, it's a voice like this, I think, like Peter Pan, because he's a very young boy, and he hasn't really grown up, and he just sort of is a very innocent little boy when it comes to dealing with people, because he hasn't met many people. It's as simple as that. I don't want to do anything much more different to it
and
than that.
And Wendy?
My voice is hoarse. I've been doing too many readings. Wendy's is a softer voice than that, probably talking like this, very soft and very, because she doesn't want to frighten him. And that's what the story is. Also, Ridley Pearson and Dave Barry have decided, let's tell the story of what happened before. How did Peter learn how to fly? Who was Peter Pan? So they've come up with a series of books called Peter and the Star Catchers, for instance, which Walt Disney is now, I believe, going to make into a musical. And I've recorded 2 of their books, and the 3rd book on Peter and whatever it is.
You really did not imagine when all this began how it was going to expand.
Not at my age. I thought I would probably continue being an actor on the stage and go into my old age being very happy with life.
Is it okay with you that you're likely, or you may, I shouldn't say you're likely, that you may be remembered more for Harry Potter than your acting?
Absolutely. And the reason being that all film actors and all television actors and all narrators are remembered more for that type of work than stage work, because we only exist in the minds, in the memories of the people who saw us on the stage. We don't exist anywhere else. We're not captured on film. We're not captured on tape. So as soon as that audience starts to lose the memory of your performance of 20, 30 years ago, it's as if you never existed. People can only say there used to be an actor called so-and-so. We don't know what he did, but it sounds as if he was marvelous from the descriptions. It's only a pity that we can't capture all these wonderful stage performances on tape, as we could do. Unfortunately, various people need a cut of the profits, and that's why you just can't do it. It's too expensive.
Of course, the other element is the sound of the human voice,
mm-hmm.
and how we remember the sound of the human voice, because it does seem to penetrate our consciousness.
Absolutely. This is why certain of those voices that I've created are really based on those early English radio comics, because they all had a very distinctive voice. Jack Benny just had to say hello, and you fell about laughing.
Absolutely.
And I thought, right, so we need distinctive voices.
At 6 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. You actually began training for the stage when you were 9 years old.
That's right, yes. I went to see a show called Me and My Girl, which was a wonderful show that with Lupino Lane, the clown. And I saw this little man with a big crown on and a big cloak stagger down some steps, stagger to the footlights, trip over the footlights and disappear into the pit, into the orchestra pit. And the audience fell about with laughter. I'd never heard so many people laughing. I'd heard 100 people cheering at a football game, but I'd never heard 2,000 people laughing. And the sound of that laughter made the hairs go up on the back of my neck. And I remember saying to my dad then, I'd like to do that. He said, what? I said, I want to make people laugh. And he said, and I don't know where he got this information, if you want to do that, I think you should learn how to move. And that's the secret of all theatre. You are moving from the minute you walk on that stage. You are moving by lifting an eyebrow. You are moving by twitching your nose. You are moving with every step you take. Everything on stage is a movement, creating a moment. And so I decided to go to dancing lessons, and I did 6 years of ballet, tap, ballroom dancing, national dancing, eccentric comedy dancing, and judo. And that was for 6 years.
And then, what did your parents think of your leaving school at 17 to go off and pursue your dream?
I think perhaps my father thought that he wished he had had my dreams when he was a young man. And I think what they did more than anything, they encouraged me to live my dreams. Just go out and be. Meaning, be anything. At that age, 17, you can be what you like. You can just go out, but be something. Don't just be like a stone. Don't just take it for granted. This is as far as life can take you when you come from a small village. Go over that horizon and see what distance there is. See, look around and see what there is to follow you. Put your trust in somebody who can really help. I mean, for instance, there's a lovely poem that I've lived by all my years. Christopher Logue, he wrote, "Come to the edge. It's too high. Come to the edge. We might fall. Come to the edge." And they came, and he pushed them, and they flew.
Jim Dale. He's the voice of all the characters in the Harry Potter audiobook series. He has also recorded Around the World in 80 Days, Peter Pan, and A Christmas Carol. What a delight to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane.
And thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Ann Adams, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, and Tanya Weinberg. The engineer is Andrew Chadwick. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives, cassette and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.